Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the nation. That would be the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Dr. Dave, and we'd like to thank all of our affiliates along the Radio Northwest Network and the ones in Seattle and down in Texas also. We're in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios here in downtown Portland. My next guest doesn't need too much of an introduction, actually. He's famous and friendly and knows what the hell he's doing around a barbecue pit. Myron Mixon, welcome back to Barbecue Nation, my friend.
Glad to be back.
So tell us, it's been about a year. You've had a busy year, besides the being mayor of the town you live in, but also doing your all your TV shows and your competitions. How's that been going for you?
It's been going good. Don't get to do as many competitions as used to. I used to do 40, 45 a year. I think last year we got to do five. We got a restaurant now and outside of D.C. in Alexandria, Virginia. I spend about 10 days a month up there. Right now, we're out promoting our Myron Mixon organic barbecue pellets, wood pellets.
Uh-huh.
And we got them in all the Ace stores now, Ace Hardware stores, and all the independent stores. Been doing a lot of trade shows. Matter of fact, I got one coming up, not this weekend, but the next, in Vegas, biggest hardware trade show in the U.S. And been staying on the road with that. Got a new cookbook we're writing right now. It's come out in May of 2019. Cooked schools, building smokers, making appearances in Australia. We were down there for 2 weeks doing demos and teaching classes at two festivals they had there in Sydney and in Melbourne. So anything that revolves around barbecue, except pretty much I've got to cook one time this year so far. competitions has been my job, but the thing I love to do the most is compete, and I don't get to hardly do that anymore.
So how did you like Australia? I've been there a number of times, and I had young Jess Prilis on the show a few weeks ago, and we had a good time together. I love Australia.
I do too. I mean, I had a great time. Like I said, I was down there 2 weeks. The only part of it I didn't like, the going down wasn't bad. It's a 20-hour flight out of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I live in Georgia, and I fly out of Atlanta. And not much jet lag. But coming back after I've been there 2 weeks, got acclimated to their time zone, their times, you know, getting up and down. And when I got back home, I was like, I mean, really ill, sick.
Yeah.
For like 3 or 4 days until I got, you know, until I got straightened out. And I've traveled. I've been to South Korea. You know, been to Kuwait and done some things, and but I guess it was just being there that long. The longest I'd ever been away was like 10 days in South Korea, but that 14 days down there and then come back, that was bad on me. But being there in Australia itself, it was awesome. I mean, they had great weather. We were, like I said, in Sydney and Melbourne for the two festivals, and it was great.
Oh, they're great people down there. I know what the problem was, though. You're on the bottom of the earth, so you're virtually standing upside down for 14 days. See? And that's
and all the blood runs to my head.
Yeah, all the blood runs to your head when you get home. And I had that problem a couple times myself getting home. It is a long flight down there.
I tell you what, it was odd. I mean, going down, you know, again, I was sleeping, and I guess everybody else figured it out better than I did, but I wake up. And you look around inside the cabin, and all these people are asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the only one awake, and I'm like, you know, this is kind of weird. But I just went over to the bar. They had a bar about every 30 seconds, and I got me a drink and went back to bed.
Yeah, now that's the way to do it. I learned my lesson first time down there. I went from Portland to
to San Francisco, to Honolulu, to Auckland, and then over to Sydney, and then I had to go up to Brisbane. That took like 34 hours, and I was just one whipped dog when I got there.
We flew from Atlanta. It's 5 hours from Milan to L.A., and then I did L.A. straight to Melbourne. That was 16 hours.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually shorter coming back for some reason.
Do what?
I said the flight back was – my flight back only took like 14 and a half hours, but going down there the second time, because I did the L.A. to Sydney thing like you did or to Melbourne, and it was longer, but coming home it was shorter. I never figured that out. I guess the curvature of the earth, or maybe I just passed out finally. I don't know, but it was a great time down there. And those people,
I tell you what, they love barbecue. They had a KCBS event going on at the both festivals, and it was great. I mean, they're really big into barbecuing now. They want to do it like we're doing it. Especially the KCBS cooks that want to do that that organization's barbecuing, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, they have a good time, and they're always interested. I know we have some actually listeners on the show here from Australia. We've got probably a couple dozen of them that we can track them. We don't track them personally, but we can see the countries of origin from where they listen to the show, and it is from the Australia area or the Australia continent. And they have a lot of fun. I can tell you that. I know that when I got home and my blood alcohol content went down to normal and I slept for about 4 days. So
they love to drink beer. I can tell you that.
Oh, they love that stuff. They love that stuff. And they got me into, to drinking port. So, anyway, that was all good. I ate kangaroo while I was there. That was some stringy tough crap, but we won't go.
I didn't do any of that. I didn't even see any kangaroos. Like I say, I stayed around Melbourne and Sydney, and I asked about them, and they said they were more, I think, towards Perth or wherever. It was not where I was at.
Well, there was.
I wouldn't eat one, no way.
Oh, I had to try some. I mean, I drank camel milk when I was in Saudi Arabia, for God's sakes. I mean, and that's not for the faint of heart, I can tell you that either. So,
see this. I ain't eating something that I can't go to the supermarket and buy.
I don't blame you on that. So, how are your? We got a couple minutes here before we got to go to break. But how are the TV shows coming for you?
Well, right now, I mean, we haven't done any Pitmaster since last time we filmed a Pitmaster Smoked. I think it was in 2016. That was the last ones, the last episodes, but they've been running a lot of reruns. And you know, Discovery now has bought Scripps, which owns Food Network and owns Travel Channel, owns Cooking Channel, mm-hmm. HGTV. So we're looking for some of those reruns maybe to run over there and on some of those new stations they bought. And maybe we'll wind up with a new life.
There you go. I don't see why not, because your shows are still very well received out there. I know they are out here on the coast.
What about Barbecue Pitmasters? It has been. I mean, I know they got other ones. Not knocking anybody else's on any other shows, but Barbecue Pitmasters is the only barbecue show that actually stuck and actually had the kind of ratings you had to have to be able to come back. We did like. If you count it, we shot sometimes two seasons in a year. But if you count all the seasons separate, we did like 9 seasons of Pitmasters. And, you know, that's pretty much unheard of in any reality-type show. And that format and that energy that was in that show is the only one that ever got this kind of ratings and was able to stick and, you know, have longevity. And it would surprise me a lot if you don't see it come back in some form. May not be called Pitmasters, but I think that the way that it was structured, I think you'll see that happen.
I would hope so. Hey, we're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. I want to also say Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef from the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Beef you can actually feel good about. So we're going to take a break, and Myron will be back to join us right after this. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Dr. Dave and our affiliates down the Radio Northwest Network. Say hi to our friends, especially up in Seattle, 570 KVI News.
Nice guys.
Nice guys. We like them up there a lot. We like everybody. And also, if you want to contact us, you can send me an email at Barbecue Nation. That's BBQNation@KXL.com. And I want to make an announcement. It looks like next week, the Barbecue Nation JT new website will be up and running.
Woohoo!
So we'll be able to give everybody information that way, and then you can send us any questions or whatever directly. It's fun. Whatever.
Nice.
It's fun. It's going to be a nice site. Anyway, we're talking with Myron Mixon today, the winningest man in barbecue. Did you know that, David?
I did not.
Myron.
I thought you were.
No, I'm probably the guy with the most BS in barbecue.
Oh,
but,
well, that makes sense.
But Myron's the winningest guy in barbecue.
Nice.
Do you miss the competition, Myron? You said you're not doing that many anymore.
Yeah, for sure. That's one thing I really love. And I love anything to do with barbecue. I love doing what I'm doing now, promoting products and the business side of it. But, you know, the competition is what I started with as far as getting off my career. Now, I started learning how to barbecue at 9 years old. My dad's takeout barbecue business, but started competing in 96, and I ran hard till probably 2009 and 2010, and then I started cutting back because different things started filling those voids, which I'm very proud of and very blessed to have. But the competition is what provided the engine to be able to do all those things. So it's kind of ironic that what got me where I'm at, I can't do as many of anymore. Looking forward to coming up. Now, we've got the Memphis May World Championships coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm always there to do it. We won the last time there in 2016, so we'll be trying to win our fifth World Championship there coming up. And you know, I got a couple of contests I love to go to. I like to do the one in Washington, D.C. It's in June. And, of course, the American Royal.
Oh, yeah.
But after I hit those big ones, I don't get to do maybe one or two more contests around. That about winds the season up for me because my weekends are pretty much booked after that. I always put those big ones in into my calendars before we even start filling in with other things. But plus, the cook schools take up a weekend, so it's not like it used to be.
Now, how's it changed? How's the competition changed? Is it more intense? Is it has the way things are done? I don't mean the basics, but the finesse part, has that changed over the years? Give us your overview.
I think the competition level is a lot tighter, simply because, you know, as the years have gone, you got more people teaching classes, you got more people writing cookbooks. That you got more information on the internet, and of course you got to wade through that and pick out what is true, accurate, and what is great or good, because there's, you know, BS in everything you do, and that's, you know, barbecue's no different.
Sure,
but yeah, the competition level is a lot tighter now than it's ever been. But I feel like the competition also is all your top echelon teams, and it's separated from the top to the bottom by a very small margin. But even with that, the ones that are consistently on the road, traveling, you know, the more you cook, the better you're going to be at it. And that's
sure.
Just a fact. Those teams doing 30 to 40 contests a year, you're going to stay on edge. You're going to stay honed down on your techniques and your cooking practices. You're going to be ready. But the thing is, too, I think the top teams that are competing, they're all traveling the same path. And it's just my opinion. I feel like the ones winning is basically using the same product, same flavor profiles. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I just feel like that everybody's kind of plays follow the leader. I don't see anybody stepping out and trying new flavor profiles because – you know, it's not going to get you anything. I think the judges are dictating, as they should, what flavor profiles they want to have and what they want to taste.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once a team finds out a niche and figures out this flavor is going to win, and it leaks out, then you got, you know, 100 more duplicating it. So I don't see as much experimentation as you used to have when I first started. You know, used to people would play with different flavor profiles. I mean, in different things to be unique and different. Whereas, and again, I'm not sitting here criticizing and saying it's a bad thing. It's just the way the competition circuit's turned. Everybody starts using the same products to get the same end result, and food start tasting pretty close to each other's. Each competitor's tasting the same. I challenge them to this. Let me see your ingredient list, your actual ingredient list, you know, and then let me get the next top 10 players in the game. And I guarantee you at least one sauce, and I'm sure they combine sauces, I'm sure at least one sauce all of them are using. You know what I'm saying?
No, I get it. I get it.
Well, and I'm going to tell you this, too. I believe back in the day when I first started, I cooked predominantly Memphis and May events. I mean, that's all I cooked. I didn't get into KC Vance until the mid-2000s. So I wasn't doing the brisket. I wasn't doing the chicken. I was doing all the pork.
Right.
You used to get rewarded for being unique and different. Nowadays, in competition, you need to be on the same line. And I'm not saying barbecue restaurant barbecue is not great, but you got to be in that line. You got to be in that Memphis, Kansas City, sweet hickory stuff to be able to have a shot. And that's what I'm talking about, the flavor profiles. It's got to be in there. You can't come in with a vinegar sauce. You can't come in there with a mustard sauce, as great as they are, and I love both. I make both and sell both. You pretty well got to be in that line. And
absolutely.
And I'm going to tell you something. You go in your favorite supermarket, the big retail stores. You look down the sauce aisles. There's going to be 1,000 sauces down that sauce aisle. 99% of them is going to be that hickory, sweet, molasses, honey, smoke, ketchup-based sauce. Now, you think about that a minute.
No.
And all that relates. Well, it does. And it falls over into your competition as well as in the restaurant business, too, in barbecue restaurants. So that's the flavor profiles now that you're seeing more and more on the circuit.
Yep.
That wasn't the way when I first started. I mean, you had fruit-based sauces. Not saying there's not any out there now, but there were a lot of different flavors. I feel like there were more uniqueness to the barbecue in back then than it is now.
Yep. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Myron Mixon right here. Guess what? On Barbecue Nation right after this. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back. It's Barbecue Nation here with JT and Dr. Dave. And
hey.
That's him. He's going out. You're going on vacation.
I am.
You're a mutt.
Anniversary, you know.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What, 113 years?
No, 13.
13 years. Okay. And we've got Myron Mixon, super barbecue genius on the other end of the line. And again, wanted to say thanks to our friends at Painted Hills Natural Beef for making this possible. From the heart of the Pacific Northwest comes a beef product you can feel good about. And I do, because I've been working with these folks for years. Also, my buddy down there at Barclays Buy, Sell, and Pawn, Mark's having sidewalk sales when the weather's nice, like it is for the next, you know, 23 minutes. So go by, if you're going down 99E, check him out there. We're talking with Myron Mixon, the winningest guy in barbecue, and, of course, the host and producer of Pit Masters and quite a number of things, actually. But do you ever get time to sit down and cook for your family, Myron?
Very seldom. But I did, matter of fact, you speak of that. Whenever I did it, like, the night before last, and it was just chicken. I mean, it was good chicken. I do it like I would do for a contest or like we do in our restaurants. We brined it, and I treated the skin the same way where I could have bite-through skin and all this kind of stuff. But whenever I do stuff here at the house and when I'm in town, I do things I can cook quickly. I don't want to jump out here and jump on a whole hog. And I don't even want to fool butts or briskets, because at least once a month, whether I'm competing or not, I'm teaching a class. And I'm going to be cooking. You know, in our class, we do about 1,500 pounds of product for every class because it's hands-on. And all the students get to actually touch the meat and prep the meat and do the things that they're that I show them how to do. So I'm cooking at least once a month these big meats. But I'll do stuff like chicken. I like to do tenderloins. Very seldom do ribs. I was raised on pork, being from Georgia. I mean, when you say pork or barbecue in Georgia, you always talk about pork.
Pork, yeah.
And ribs was something we always cooked. Tenderloin wasn't something we always did. So I'm big on doing tenderloins. I like to do steaks. Things I can do quickly. I don't want to be tied up around a grill when I'm trying to relax and get dinner ready, or a smoker for, you know, 5 or 6 hours. You know, that's kind of my job. And I love my job, but I don't want to have to do it every time I want to eat.
No, I get that. I get that. So I was reading a thing on you last night again, and what is your idea of the perfect steak? Myron Mixon's perfect steak.
For me, a perfect steak, I mean, you know, it can be as simple as putting the salt and pepper on it, and that's what I do with a lot of them. Put a little bit of olive oil on them and salt and pepper and get a hot. Now, I do like to do this. I will start a fire with hickory and oak, maybe some peach wood if I got it, and build me some coals. I'll start that up maybe 3 hours before I'm going to do the steaks, like in the afternoon. And I'll actually cook with the wood coals instead of lighting off charcoal. Nothing wrong with charcoal, but,
yeah,
you know, I got the wood, I got the time, and I'll get the coals going first and then sear the steaks off. You know, you go through all that work to do about a three-minute deal on each side, about a two-inch steak. But it's worth it. You know, I got time right here at the compound where we teach our classes. We're set up for the classes. And I got all the equipment sitting there from the barrels, the burn barrels, and everything else we do for my members class to make the coals. So I'll start off and I'll get me some coals up and grill off some steaks. I love doing them just simple like that. I can go and use some of my rubs on them. I like to do the reverse sear, you know, where we go in and I'll put them like a coal smoke in the smoker for about, you know, maybe an hour, 120 degrees, 110 degrees, let them soak some smoke up, and then go in and sear them off hard. But I tell people all the time, you can't, and there's cost. I mean, it costs more money, and I'm not knocking anybody that gets a half-inch steak or even a three-quarter or one-inch. To really do a great steak, you got to get, regardless of the breed of cow, whatever, you got to get a two-inch steak, or at least a two-inch, to be able to really do it right and cook it to a rare to a medium rare, and even if you want to do a medium. Because you start fooling around with half-inch steaks and stuff, you just don't leave any margin there for juice to stay inside the steak. Regardless of how fast you hit it on each side and how hot, it's not going to be as good as a thicker-cut steak.
Right, right. And I'm a firm believer in basically salt and pepper on steaks.
I mean, I am, too. That's what I mentioned. I mean, the simpler it is. I'm not knocking in the rubs. I'll sometimes be fast. I'll grab a shaker rub and hit it. But salt and pepper is pretty well all I do on a steak.
Yeah, I like it, you know. And if I want, I mean, I'm, you know, old farm boy, too. But, I mean, my God, if I want something special on a steak, my secret ingredient is Worcestershire sauce. So there you go. I'm pretty fancy, you know, when you do that.
Spell it.
Yeah, it's good though, but it works, and I don't have
That really is what it's made for, that Dale steak seasoning.
Yep, and you know, I don't have anybody, when you set it down in front of them, they go, oh God, I can't, well, sure, no, get it out of here, man, I can't do that, you know. No, they eat it and they smile, and that's what I like to see. So there you go.
That's exactly right, and it's free.
It's free, yeah, and well, they like some of my cowboy friends. They like that part the best—that it's free. Trust me.
That's the alcohol. Whenever anybody can get free alcohol, they love that too.
Oh yeah, you give them a two inch thick ribeye and all the beer they can drink. You got friends at least for the next 3 hours. You know, I don't know
exactly
about
right.
I don't know about the rest of your life, but you got them for 3 hours. You can do that. What does your wife think of all this?
But, I mean, she likes it, especially spending the money part of it. She likes doing that. But she's been with me the whole time, you know, from building everything I've got.
Sure.
I mean, she's got a regular job, day job. She's the tax commissioner here in Dooley County. And elected position. She's been tax commissioner now over 20 years. And she comes in every day at 5 o'clock, and we got our web store, which we keep all of our products right here at the compound. We ship every sauce, every rub, every one of my barbecue gadgets, all that gets shipped right here in Unadilla, Georgia from my compound, and she and my daughter ship and package every one of them. So, and we'll do 100 orders a day average. So she's got a full-time job. Then she comes in and helps me do that business.
Well, then
been doing that since 2005. I mean, and, you know, it's always been the family. I got my son, David. He works with the smoker division for our smoker company out of Connecticut, Myron Mixon Smokers. And he's also working on in the business when we're on the pellets.
Mm-hmm.
Also we're putting our sauces and rubs now in independent brick and mortar.
Yep.
Barbecue stores and hearth and patios type stores. So we just started that in the last couple of months. I've never had my products in any retail store other than on my website. You couldn't get my stuff anywhere but there. And now we're starting to pick and choose, and we got a selection process on that. But putting them in some pretty cool stores that are one-offs, and they're independents. They're not chains. And I feel like, not knocking anybody else's business plan, but I feel like sometimes when you get your brand in a chain store, big box store, it demeans that brand. And that's just my opinion. And I work too damn hard for my brand, and to get it where it's at, to demean it or to sacrifice anything in it. So I feel like I'm an independent, and I feel like the independent hardware stores, the independent sauce and rub stores, and the independent, you know, the grill stores out there, that's the place where my products need to be.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that we got to go to break here in a second, but I know that when I was doing the spices, one, it's a pain to get into big box stores and all that. And secondly, it wasn't worth it to me. So I went back to doing kind of one-off stores and stuff like that.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, you can't, those are in it, you know, they may argue the other way. I know personally, it ain't horror stories. I know people that had products, and they weren't barbecue products, but they couldn't wait to get to Bentonville to get them in that store and lost their business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everybody believes if I can get in one of these big box stores, it's going to make me a millionaire. I just got to get in that one box store. And one thing they need to remember, and sometimes I lost sight of that, but not often, but I did. One thing my dad always told me, if that's not how much you're making, it's about how much you keep it.
Yep, that's true.
And that's what you run into a lot of times when you get in these box stores. The percentages change where you're basically wearing out your equipment trying to make whatever it is you're making for these stores, and they're keeping all the money, and you ain't getting nothing but worn-out equipment.
There you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back, wrap up the show with Myron Mixon right after this. Everybody, thanks for listening. This is Barbecue Nation. I'm JT with Dr. Dave and Myron Mixon on the line with us. I wish you guys were privy to the stuff we say off the air, because it's good, but I'm not going to share it with you, put it that way. Myron and I are having too much fun. What's the biggest thing you think you've learned about barbecue over the last 20 years, Myron?
The biggest thing I've learned about barbecue, and I'm going to give a little preface to it, I guess you want to call it, before I tell you what. You always hear a lot of, especially purists, or they call themselves purists or historians of barbecue, and they don't like the avenue that barbecue's taking. And they like it to be, you know, they like Carolina. All the Carolinas need to stay Carolina style, whatever that is. Texas barbecue, it don't need to have any influence from nobody. It needs to be what it was back during the Alamo. And Kansas City needs to be whenever Chisholm came up through there and brought the cows, and, you know, and Memphis barbecue needs to be what it was, you know, when the steamboats were going up and down the damn Mississippi River. Well, that's not a bad thing to be able to have examples of that.
Sure.
I mean, I think you always need to have historical examples of that style of barbecue, but you got to do what the market bears. But the thing about it is, to me, the thing I've seen in the last 20 years is barbecue's evolving. You're seeing a blend and a mixture of a lot of these regions because, you know, we're a global community, and especially inside the U.S., people travel, they pick up roots, and go and set them down somewhere else. You got people that's coming in from Kansas City, moving to Atlanta, Georgia, vice versa. And it's because barbecue's evolving. I mean, what, 20 years ago, you might have had 10 barbecue restaurants, or they called themselves barbecue restaurants in New York City. Probably got 100-plus now.
Right.
You know, and I would dare to – and I'm not – I know some great stores up there that's got great barbecue, but I'm sure none of them would die-hard Carolina-style barbecue that my daddy was raised on. That's what Georgia barbecue traditionally was. It's Carolina vinegar-based, coal-fired barbecue. And but it's a mixture. It's a blend. It's a blend that all people can enjoy. And I'm glad to see it evolve. It makes me understand and me know that barbecue is going to continue. Whenever it stops and gets stagnant and stands still, then it's going to become, you know, a secondary genre of food. And right now, it's the number one genre of food in this country, even the world right now. And it's because it has evolved. It's because it has, it's gotten different varieties of barbecue out there now. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I teach a class called Barbecue Memories. It's the way my dad barbecued. It's the way he taught me to barbecue. And it's something to great to know. It's what why they barbecue for 200 years. And it's great to know that. You don't need to lose sight of that, and you need some people that know how to do that. But with that being said, you know, there's nothing wrong with change. There's nothing wrong with barbecue flavors evolving and techniques and styles and different meats that are used in barbecue.
Yeah, I think I get a little wary sometimes of people that it's like, I only do Santa Monica style or Santa Maria style, or I only do, you know, South Denver on 54th Street style. It's like, you know, good barbecue is good barbecue, period.
Well, yeah. I watch some of the shows, and I'm not knocking them. I see they say, I do strictly damn South Carolina old school style, and they walk over to a gas fire damn smoking load in the pit, and I'm thinking, well, I call bullshit on that then. There's nothing wrong with using gas-fired wood assist because we sell them and build them.
Yeah.
I mean, my Mrs. Smoke sells and build them. But don't sit there and tell me you just die hard and I'm not going to deviate off of my roots and you walking over to this damn stainless steel contraption to load your meat on.
Yeah.
If you want to do the die hard, get your masonry pit, go out and cut your own wood, split your wood, burn the coals, and shovel your damn coals. Otherwise, go along with the rest of us and say it's a good thing that barbecue's evolved.
Yes, it is. And I think you're right. I think, you know, everybody's got a little different palate. Everybody's got a little different sensories in their nose and their taste buds and what have you. So maybe this style's got a little too much pepper for them or too much mustard or too much vinegar, whatever it is. But I'm glad that we've evolved. And speaking of evolving, we got to get out of here in a minute. Myron, I really appreciate you being on the show with us today. Again, we've made it a yearly event here now. So we'll do it again next year or maybe sooner. How's that?
Sounds great. Sounds great. And anybody out there that cares anything about me and likes me, pray for me at Memphis this year where I can win this fifth world championship.
We'll do that. We'll do that.
I need all your prayers. Use up some of your own personal prayers and send one my way.
We'll talk to the big pit master in the sky for you, buddy, and we'll make it happen. How's that?
That sounds good.
All right. We got to get out of here. For Dr. Dave and Myron Mixon and myself, JT, thank you for listening to Barbecue Nation on the Radio Northwest Network today. We'll be back next week with another show. And take us out, Dr. Dave. We'll see you all next week.